All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Let's begin. Thank you to Yehuda for giving the shiur yesterday. Let's begin today's daf is your test. We're picking up on the bottom of Yud Ches Amud Beis, the last line. So the mission. So the Braisa said as follows: Ima Cheta Amar B'Tshuma Ad Shiyotzem in a Hektish Shachol. So we'll say. So remember again. So the Gemara continuing a little bit with the Braisa. Chet when mentioned with Tshuma. Ultimate top of your test. Achiyetze minak kodesh lachol. So remember again, one only violates what's called misappropriation of truma. When one goes in and takes it from its consecrated status and uses it in a mundane status. Minak kodesh lachodesh. So we'll say first off, if you look at the hagos etziyunim os aleph on the right hand margin of the page. So he adds on the girsa afcheita amar b'meila. Therefore, we'll say paradigmatic me'ila is also when what? You take something that is consecrated and you go ahead and you use it in a mundane way. So we'll say, so that's the most basic idea. The same way that if I take truma and I go ahead and I use it, I take it from Kodesh and I use it in a chol fashion. So to me'ila, if I take something that is Kodesh and I use it in a chol fashion, that is Aser. But when it comes to me'ila, the Gemara asks an additional question. Mina Kodesh l'Kodesh. What about me'ila, Rabbi say, when it's misappropriation from one consecrated purpose to a different consecrated purpose? In other words, paradigmatic me'ila is when I go and I take something that is consecrated and I use it for an unconsecrated purpose. What about taking something that is consecrated for purpose A and using it for purpose B? For example, kigon lakach kinei zavim v'kinei zavos v'kinei yoldos. So we'll say, for example, let's say a person went ahead. If you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says me kodesh lakodesh kigon shalakach mi maos hagdish v'kana mehan kinei zavim v'kinei yoldos. So we'll say, let's say, for example, I took money from hagdish. But I didn't use it to go ahead and purchase something mundane for myself. Instead, I used it to go ahead and purchase items to be used to satisfy my sacrificial obligations. So I took money from Hekdish, and I used it to purchase bird pairs for Zavos, or for Yoldos, the Shakal Shiklo. Or I went ahead and, for example, I took money from the Beis HaMikdash, and I used it to satisfy my Machtzis HaShakal obligation, or Vehibi Chatoso, or I took money from Kodesh and I used it to purchase my Chatos, my Asham, Mina Hegdish, so the Gemara says. And this is a different kind of situation over here. So as opposed to general Mi'ila, where I'm taking something consecrated and using it for something mundane, in this case I'm taking something consecrated and I'm misappropriating it for another consecrated use. So what's Talach in those circumstances? So the Gemara says, Kevan Shehotzi Ma'al Divrei Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon says that Halacha L'maisa, once you go ahead and you make the expenditure, so once you go ahead and Halacha L'maisa, misappropriate it, quote unquote, for a different sacrificial purpose or a different consecrated purpose, that's called Mi'ila. That's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Rabbi Huda Omer, Ad She Yizrok Adam. Rabbi Huda holds that no, you won't be Chayiv until when? Until you do Zrika. Until you do Zrika on the misappropriate name. Rabbi say, but again, that's a detail. Bottom line is what? Bottom line is, that's also called Me'ila. Right? So we'll say, so this is an incredible novelty. So Minayin. So we'll say, so you understand what's just happened over here? You see, what we've established up until now is that Me'ila is similar to Truma. Just like by Truma, if you take consecrated Truma and misuse it for mundane purposes, that's Usur. So to paradigmatic Me'ila, you take something that is Kodesh, you misappropriate for something mundane. That's Me'ila. Now what we're adding in is, how do I know that it's also Me'ila if you take something that was consecrated for purpose A and you use it for consecrated purpose B? Meaning, I'll say, you understand the Shaila? I might have thought, that's not called Me'ila. You know what I'm saying? Taking something consecrated and using it for something mundane. How do I know that it's even called Me'ila if you go ahead and you misappropriate an item for a different consecrated use? It was consecrated for purpose A, and you use it now for consecrated purpose B. That's also called Me'ila. Talmud Lomar, Tim Ol Ma'ol Mikom Makom. There's Rabbi said the Torah goes ahead, the Gemara goes ahead and explains that the double lashon of Tim Ol Ma'ol, the double lashon ultimately again of Me'ila, Me'ila twice, tells me that what? That Halacha L'Maisa, not only is it called Me'ila when you go in and you take something from a consecrated purpose and use it for a mundane purpose, But even if you take an item that was consecrated for one purpose and use it for another consecrated purpose, that is also called Mi'ilah. And I'm about to say that is indeed Halacha L'maisa. Good. Amar Mar, supposed to be go weiter. Amar Mar, Nefesh, Echad Hayochid, Ve'echad Hanasi, Ve'echad Hamashuach B'mashmas. So let's listen to this. So Nefesh teaches us that who is subject to the Halachos of Mi'ilah? An individual, a Yachid, the Nasi, and the Mashuach, the coin Mashuach, right? The coin of Mashuach, B'Shem HaMishcha. So whether ultimately, again, we're talking about Stam an individual, or the Nasi, or the coin Gadol, Halacha L'maisa, they are all included in the prohibition of Mi'ilah. To which the Gemara says, Sheyachol Mai Pshita. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Of course they're all included in the prohibition of Mi'ilah. Nefesh Ksib. They both say, when the Torah goes ahead and discusses the prohibition of Mi'ilah, the Torah uses the Lashon of Nefesh. Nefesh means what? Nefesh means what? Any person. So what's the Havamina that ultimately, again, the Nasi or the Kohen Gadol wouldn't be included? They both say, listen, this is actually quite fascinating. Ma'od Tema, Amrachmana, Va'asher, so we'll say, V'ligi Rashi, Rashi says, Sheyachol Mai, Kolomar, Ma'hava Sakadaitcha Lama'it Nasi O Mashuach Mi'ilah. Pshita to kulan chayavin the nefesh ksiv the nefesh mashma ben yachid ben nasi ben mashuach. So what says so the Braisa tells me that ultimately we're coming to teach us that what that even the nasi and even the kohen gadol are included in the prohibition of mi'ilah. So which the Gemara says, of course they are. What's the havamina? The Torah used the lashon of nefesh. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you what havamina is. Quite amazing. Ma'od the tema amar rachmana va'asher yitein mimenu al zar. Shabosai. The pasuk over here that the Gemara is quoting is talking about Shemen HaMishcha, anointing oil. So the pasuk says, Ish asher yirkach kamahu. So a person who will go ahead and literally make the combination, right? Literally, yirkach means from to mix the ingredients, like for the Shemen HaMishcha. V'asher yitin mimenu al zar, and whoever will place the Shemen HaMishcha on a zar. So we'll say zar means a non-kohen or non-melech. So again, ultimately the prohibition or the punishment is karis. Supposed to listen to this. So here, remember the concept of making Shemen HaMishcha and ultimately using it for inappropriate purposes is Mi'ilah. This is Mi'ilah. So the Torah, when discussing the prohibition of Mi'ilah by Shemen HaMishcha, says who does it apply to? It applies to a Zar. V'hai lav Zarhu. Rabbi said, now think about this. The Kohen Gadol and the Melech, neither of them are called a Zar. They're not a stranger when it comes ultimately again to the Shemen HaMishcha. Why not? Because I will say both are anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha. Right? The Kohen Gadol is anointed, and ultimately again, Kohen Gadol is anointed, and Halacha L'maisa, a Melech is anointed. So neither of them are called a Zar vis-a-vis Shemen HaMishcha. So I might have thought, V'hai lav Zaru, the Imshach Bigavei. So we'll say, I would have thought that since again the Kohen Gadol and ultimately again a Melech, neither of them are called a Zar vis-a-vis Shemen HaMishcha. Therefore, what I might have thought that the prohibition of Mi'ilah does not apply to these individuals. Kamashmalan, that it does. Kamashmalan, we'll say that Nefesh means that Halacha L'maisa, the prohibition of Mi'ilah applies even to those individuals who themselves are anointed with Shemen HaMishcha. Good. So we'll say, and again, obviously, it's not just that Mi'ilah applies to them as Shemen HaMishcha, it's that Mi'ilah will apply to them in all circumstances. So we'll say, so therefore again, so just so we're following the drushes over here, Timal Ma'al, from that we learn that Mi'ilah applies even when you go ahead and you repurpose something from one Kodesh purpose to another Kodesh purpose, not just when you redesignate something from Kodesh to Chol. Nefesh teaches me that even those individuals who might have permitted use with certain consecrated items are still subject to the general halachos of Mi'ilah. Next. So the Gemara now says, we'll say something amazing. V'aksha, lachmana l'sota, u'la'avodas kochavim, u'le'truma. So let's listen to this. The Torah equates, or the Torah compares Mi'ilah to Sota, to idolatry, and to Truma. So watch this. So we'll say, in other words, to teach us that we learn different halachos from these different circumstances to Mi'ilah. The Sota, so what's the comparison between Sota and Mi'ilah? It's actually quite interesting. Sota, the Afagav, the Lo Pagam, So I'll say, see, even though this is actually quite interesting, by sota, if you take a look at Rashi, so the Gemara says over here, Rashi says over here, fine, we'll just do this outside. So the Gemara is like this. So by sota, afagav lo pagam. Now, both say, what does it mean, afagav lo pagam? The claim of sota, is made against a woman who is not a besula. So therefore, I will say, technically speaking, right? Because remember again, sota is a din in ashes ish. You have a married woman who is accused of alleged adultery. So I say, so what happens in the sota claim? Afagav delo pagam. Pagam literally means like there was no depreciation. What does that mean, Rabbi Hussein? So the halacha lemaisa, the claim against sota, does not lower her quote-unquote value. Gabi hekdish nami. So we'll say, so too again, there is a case of mi'ila that could be mi'ila even though there's not a depreciation. What's the case of mi'ila where there's no depreciation? We'll say, this goes back to the Mishnah. Nasna taba'as biyada ma'ala. Because we'll say the Mishnah pointed out that although the paradigmatic case of Mi'ila is off, we assume the paradigmatic case of Mi'ila is where you diminish the value of an item through non-consecrated usage or through mundane usage, there is a case of Mi'ila that's compared to Sota. Just like by Sota, it's an accusation that quote-unquote doesn't devalue her. No, it sounds a little bit strange, but doesn't devalue her, right? We'll say, so too again, there's a case of Mi'ila that could be a mi'ila even without devaluation. What's that case? Where ultimately, again, she wears a golden ring that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, where even though the act of wearing the golden ring does not diminish the value of the ring, nevertheless, it's called mi'ila. But remember again, that goes back to the Mishnah, where the Mishnah essentially says there are two avenues of mi'ila. You could commit mi'ila by diminishing the value of something by a pruta, or by something that is not devalued, by getting a pruta's worth of hana'ah from it, even though the value remains the same. So we'll say that's the comparison between mi'ila and sota. Ki aksherach man alav odos kochavim. So we'll say when the Torah compares ultimately mi'ila to avodah zara, this is quite fascinating. Da'ad de'is ba shinui. We'll say you only commit avodah zara when there's a shinui, when there's a change. We'll say this is incredible. What's the shinui by avodah zara? Look at Rashi for just a moment. This is really an incredible Rashi. Second of the intermediate lines. Rashi says, "Akshi rachmana avodah kham da'ad ispe shinui shemeshana atzmo mishchina la'avodas kochavim." It will say, "What's the shinui by avodah zara? I switch teams. Mishana atzmo. I change myself. I change my orientation. Ultimately, from what?" From HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Avodah Zarah. It will say an incredible, incredible thing. So just like by Avodah Zarah, there's a shinui, kabe hekdish, so too by Mi'ila, you only violate Mi'ila when? Ad de bika bekardum, beyifka mapagim. So that goes, removes that phrase. Ultimately, I get nifam apagim. So too, I will say, just like by Avodah Zarah, I only commit Avodah Zarah when there's a shinui. I switch my orientation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Avodah Zarah, so too by Me'ila, there has to be some type of shinui as well. Take a look at Rashi. Gabi hekdish nami ad debika bekardum, atse chulin, dishina mi meleches kodesh le meleches chol. So we'll say, so too by Me'ila, I only commit Me'ila if there's some type of shinui as well. So the example that Rashi brings is, I use the axe, which ultimately was originally used to cut wood of hekdish, and now I use it to cut wood of chol. So just like avodah zarah requires a shinui, some type of change in orientation, so to mi'ila requires some type of change in orientation as well. Aksha rachmana l'truma. So I say, so remember again, mi'ila is compared to truma. What's the comparison here? Ma truma ki yochal. So when it comes to truma, in order to ultimately, again, violate truma, what that means is, in order to misappropriate truma, what do you have to do? Kiyochal, you have to eat the truma. In other words, both say, when are you chayiv for misappropriation of truma, which again, if done b'shogeg, requires what? A repayment of the principal plus a penalty fifth. That's if you consume it. Prat lemazik. They both say, this is actually quite interesting. If you go ahead and if you go ahead and look at Rashi, Ma Truma Prat Lamazik, Shim Shafach Ochlin O Mashkin Shal Truma Velo Nana Man Sheinu Chayiv. The boss is actually very interesting. If Halacha Lamaisa, you take Truma and you go ahead and you damage it. You damage it. You have Truma wine and you spill it on the ground. Or somehow you ruin Truma food. What's the Halacha? What's the Halacha? Your potter. Now, I will say there's no payment set. Now, again, I just want to point out, this is before the Truma belongs to the Kohen. You see, before Truma belongs to a Kohen and you damage it, so Halacha Lamaisi not Chayiv. Why not? We learned this before. I will say this is called Mamon She'ina Le'atovin. See, I will say, as much as the Truma belongs to a Kohen, ultimately, again, no one particular Kohen could claim rights to it. If you damage Truma, which belongs to a Kohen, that's governed by the regular halachos of damages. You'll owe money. But it's supposed to say, it's actually quite interesting. So if I have Truma, if I eat Truma, I'm a Yisrael, I eat Truma accidentally, so what's the halacha? I pay principal plus a penalty fifth. What happens if I damage Truma? Pater. So it's actually quite amazing. So when it comes to Truma, why is that? Because the Torah, when it discusses the penalty for misappropriating Truma, uses the lashon of what? The ish ki yochal kodesh bishkaga. The Torah says, if you eat it accidentally, that's where there's the chiyuv ultimately for principal plus penalty fifth. But if you damage it, if you just somehow destroy it, you spill it on the ground, you damage it, for that you're potter. So the Gemara says, ma truma ki yochal prat lamazik, gabe hekdish nami, kol davar achila ki mazik le potter. So we'll say, so the same halacha applies to me'ila. The comparison between truma and me'ila teaches me that just like by truma foods, if I consume it, I'm chayiv, but if I destroy it, I'm potter, so too by me'ila. If we're talking about, again, me'ila by kodesh foods, if you eat it, you are chayiv, but if you destroy it, you are potter. That's what the comparison teaches me. Beautiful. Ketzad nas nakatla. So remember again, going back now to the Mishnah. So again, three different comparisons between Me'ila, between Sota, between Avodas Kochavim, and to Truma. Ultimately, again, teaching me three different halachas by Me'ila. Good. So now remember again, the Mishnah spoke about the idea that when it comes, for example, to benefiting from, let's say, gold that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So the example the Gemara gave was the She'ein Bo Pigam Kevan Shenena Mal. So we'll say, if you get benefit from something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, that is not really subject to depreciation. So the halacha is, once you benefit from it, you have committed Mi'ila. So the Gemara gave, what's the example of something that is not subject to depreciation? The Gemara gave, what was the example? Gold. Right? The example was Ketzad, Nosna Katla B'Tzavara, Taba'as Biada. So what's the example was, if a woman puts on a golden necklace that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, or she wore a golden ring that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, once she got a pruta's worth of benefit, even though what? The gold has not been depreciated. Halacha lamaisa, she is chayiv for me'ila. So what's interesting about this is as follows. The Gemara is presupposing that when you wear something golden, there is no depreciation that occurs. So the Gemara says, Amrle, so Kates Nasakatla, Amrle Rav Kanal Rav Zavid, Vidava Lav Bar If Gumihu. Is that true? That gold is not subject to depreciation? Right, that gold has no depreciation. In other words, that every time you wear something golden, there's not some depreciation involved. So the Rosh, listen to this. V'hadava dekal se denun leheicha azal. Tell me, then what happened to all of the golden jewelry that Nun gave to his daughter-in-law? I will say, now, what is this talking about? Take a look at Rashi. It's actually quite interesting. Rashi says over here, V'dava la baref kumihu, diktani masisin keban shenen em mal, v'lo katani be'achi yafkum, ama delav bar pagmehu, v'imkein lo mifkan. So I'll say, so the Mishnah is making the assumption that Allah HaLamayisa, gold is not subject to depreciation. What happened about Dahava dekal se dinun, lehechazal, Nun, Adam Ashir Haya. So we'll say, this guy Nun was apparently very wealthy. And again, when his son got married, so Nun provided many beautiful golden pieces of jewelry to his daughter-in-law. When he gave his daughter-in-law the jewelry, they weighed the jewelry. I don't know, insurance purposes, whatever the reason is. He wasn't sure if the shidduch was going to work out. He wanted to make sure. Whatever the metzias was, they weighed all of the jewelry. And what happens? ulaachazman shaglo v'nimtza chaser mimishkalo. And sometime later on, they re-weighed the jewelry, and it turned out that what? That the gold had diminished in volume, had diminished in weight. Alma zav nami asali pagim. So what do you see from Abosai? You see from here that gold does diminish. Right? The Mishnah makes it sound like gold never diminishes, but you see from here that gold does diminish. Amrale dilma dava deramyan kala sechu. So listen to this from Abosai. So remember again, so just so you understand, this conversation is Rav Kahana to Rav Zavid. So Rav Zavid said back to Rav Kahana. The truth is, maybe his daughter-in-law is just like your daughter-in-law. So again, you're getting more personally over here. So what does that mean? So apparently, again, what happened? Sometimes daughters-in-law do not necessarily treat the jewelry they get from their in-laws with the greatest amount of respect. So what happens? They throw it around. They leave it around. So what happens? If you don't take care of the jewelry, that's when the jewelry diminishes in weight, diminishes in volume. If you care for your jewelry, then ultimately, again, it retains its weight. If you don't, so what he's saying over here is not, let's say, such a raya over here, because maybe our daughters-in-law are just not taking care of the jewelry as they should be taking care of the jewelry. Va'od, nehi delo ika na, I'm sorry, nehi delo ika neno pagam la'altar, li'ola milo ika pegima. So we'll say, furthermore, again, and this is really what the Gemara answers, is at the end of the day, everyone agrees that halacha l'maisa, over time, of course, gold diminishes. What the Mishnah means to say is like this. There are certain items that when you benefit from them, the diminution in the item is felt immediately. So we'll say, right, the decrease, right, is felt immediately. So everyone agrees, because we'll say that gold over time, just by usage, of course, will diminish. That's the nature of any material item. But the idea is you cannot link a certain decrease in the volume of the item with every single time it's used. So if a woman puts on a gold necklace, or she puts on a gold ring, so it's not the pshat that if you wait before she wore it and if you wait after she wears it, that there's going to be any type of decrease. Does a decrease occur? Of course. Over time everything decreases, right? The gold decreases, we decrease, everything material decreases over time. The idea that the Mishnah is saying is there are two categories of items. There are items, when you use them, the decrease is immediately discernible. So for those items of Osai, ultimately, Mi'ila is measured in a quantifiable decrease in the material of the item. On the flip side, items whose decrease is not immediately measurable, their me'ila is measured through a pruta's worth of hana. Incredible. Hanan minachatas. So we'll say, so remember again, the Mishnah also mentioned that if a person goes ahead and gets hana from a chatas, when it's alive, if the chatas, if the animal is alive, ke lo mal ad sheyifkom. Ultimately, again, you do not go ahead and affect me'ila, until you actually diminish the value. Kishu meisa kevishinama. But once it's dead, then halacha lemaisa, any amount of hana ultimately is considered to be me'ila. To which the Gemara says, michdi, let's analyze this. Ibehema tamima hainu koshal zav. I don't understand. If you're talking about an actual chatos, and halacha lemaisa, again, you have a carbon, and the animal is a tamim, the animal is unblemished, it's perfect, then ultimately, again, it's no different than a golden cup. What's halacha with a golden cup, Rabbi Osai? As soon as you get then we assume that it does not really diminish in value, because also you have to understand something very interesting. When an animal is omit to be offered up as a carbon, so the truth is, a diminution in value doesn't really matter, right? Because halacha lamaisa, once it's designated as a carbon, it's a carbon. Whether it's worth, you know, $100 or $98, it doesn't make any difference. A carbon is a carbon is a carbon. So essentially, if it's a tamim animal, then halacha lamaisa is no different than a golden cup. In which case, me'ila should be measured not by diminution of value, but rather a pruta of actual use. If it's to which the Gemara says, Amra Papa, what's the case? Beba'alas mumaskinon. We'll say the case in the Mishnah actually is where an animal was a chatos, but then developed a mum. They both say, what's the status of a chatos that has a mum? What's the status? You cannot offer it up. If you cannot offer it up, it is considered to be more like kachay by the kabayis, right? Then ultimately, that animal no longer really has sacrificial sanctity. Rather, what does that animal have? Financial sanctity. Once it has financial sanctity, then me'ilah is going to be measured how? By diminution in value. So I'll say a very interesting halacha. So when it comes to me'ilah, ultimately, again, of an actual sacrificial animal, so me'ilah is measured by a pruta's worth of hana. If I get a pruta's worth of hana, that's called me'ilah. We don't measure me'ilah in diminution of value. Why? Because by a karban, we don't look at value. Because I want to say, once an animal is a karban, an animal worth $100 or an animal worth $95, there's no difference vis-a-vis the Beis HaMikdash. Once you're a chatas, you're a chatas. However, if you're a Baal Mum which no longer has sacrificial sanctity, has financial sanctity, once you have financial sanctity, then we measure me'ilah by what? By diminution in value. Then Allah chalamaisu, you've committed me'ilah once you've diminished the value of the animal by at least a pruta. Incredible. Next Mishnah. We'll say a very interesting case here. Nene bechatzi pruta upagam kechatzi pruta. So we'll say it's an interesting case. I'm committing me'ilah, and what happens? I benefit from the animal a half a pruta amount. So I actually get a half a pruta of hana. Half a pruta of hana. Upagam bachatzi pruta. And I diminish the value of the animal or of the item by a pruta. So over here, this is what we call hybrid me'ilah. So remember, in the previous Mishnah, we established that essentially there are two different possible cases of me'ilah. Either, if an item is subject to depreciation, if you depreciate its value by a pruta, that's called me'ilah. If it's not subject to depreciation, then ultimately, if you get a pruta's worth of hana, that's called me'ilah. So what happens if you did a little bit of a hybrid? I have an item, and what happened? I go ahead and I get a half a pruta worth of hana, and I depreciate it by a half a pruta, right? So Moses says, "Well, oh, shenene b'shavar pruta b'davar echad, upagam b'shavar pruta b'davar achar." Or Rabbi will say, for that matter, now this case is a little bit different. In this case over here, Rashi points out that I'm dealing with an item shiyesh bo pegam. I am dealing with an item ultimately, again, that is subject to actual depreciation. But instead, I went ahead and what? Shenene b'shavar pruta b'davar echad, upagam b'shavar pruta b'davar echad. I got hano b'shavar pruta, or I depreciate it by b'shavar pruta. We'll define this case in just a moment. Lo ma'al, the Rabbi said, the halach is, you have not committed me'ilah, ad shehana b'shavar pruta, the yifkam b'shavar pruta. So we'll say, now what we're saying over here is as follows. That halach l'maisa, if an item is subject to depreciation, you're only chayiv me'ilah if you both got hana from a shavar pruta and what? Depreciated it by a shavar pruta. So both say you need both of the, if an item itself is subject to actual depreciation, the way me'ilah works is I must get a pruta's worth of hana while simultaneously depreciating the item by the value of a pruta. If there's simultaneity, if those two things occur, hana of a pruta, depreciation of a pruta, then halacha lemaisa, I have committed me'ilah. We'll say, obviously, we're talking about something that is subject to depreciation. If the item itself is not subject to depreciation, then we go back to the previous Mishnah. What's the halacha? If something is not subject to depreciation, when do you have me'ilah? When you get a hana's worth of hana. It's not subject. But again, assuming that it's subject to depreciation, you're only chayav for me'ilah if you both get hana and depreciate the item at the same time. If that doesn't happen, you're potter.
They're not
mitzarif. And they're not mitzarif. And then that's the idea. They're not mitzarif either. So a chatzi pruta of hana and a chatzi pruta of depreciation doesn't work either. It has to be a pruta of hana that results in a pruta of depreciation. So the Gemara goes weiter. Ein mo'al achar mo'al. But another incredible case. Ein mo'al achar mo'al b'mukdashin. We'll say the halacha is, there is no case of mi'ilah achar mi'ilah by mukdashin. Shabbos said, which essentially says that once you go ahead and you commit mi'ilah with a consecrated item, that item is no longer subject to mi'ilah. What's the logic there? The logic there is Shabbos said, because what happens after you commit mi'ilah with something? What happens? You deconsecrate it. That's effectively what happens. Once you commit mi'ilah, you deconsecrate the item. Once the item is no longer consecrated, then what? Then what? Then obviously it cannot be subject to mi'ilah a second time. So we'll say, so this is ein moel acher moel bimukdashin. Anything ultimately again that is consecrated, ultimately again halacha lameisa, once you commit to mi'ilah, it is deconsecrated and therefore cannot be subject to mi'ilah again. Ela behemo klisharis bilvad. Rabbi said with one exception, or two exceptions. The two exceptions that are behema. Rabbi says, so this is a behema of kachem mizbeach, a sacrificial animal, can be subject to mila multiple times, and klisharis, and ultimately, again, a service utensil. So, okay, so Rabbi says, so again, so therefore, halacha lemaisa, so this is a very important principle. So in general, we say, ein mi'ila achar ila b'mukdashin. Anything that is hekdish, Rabbi says, hekdish really referring to kachem mizbeach. Anything ultimately again that is sacrificially sanctified, once you commit mi'ilah with it, you've deconsecrated it. Once you've deconsecrated it, it is not subject to mi'ilah, with two exceptions: kachem mizbeach, animals, right, karbanos, and klisharis. We'll see why that is. Ketzad, what's the example of this? Ketzad, rachav al gabe behema. So we'll say if you went ahead, so if you rode on an animal that was consecrated as a karban, ubacha veiro verachav. Let's make it a party, right? So what happens, Rabbi say, I ride the carbonic animal, I invite my friend, he invites his friend, and everybody's getting, you know, kachem mizbeach pony rides, right? So everybody's going ahead and, right, getting rides on the carbonic animal. What's the halacha? Kulan malu. Everyone has committed mi'ilah. Shasa b'kos shel zav. Similarly, again, if I have a klisharis, I have a golden klisharis, and I decide to drink out of the golden klisharis, and then my friend comes and drinks out of it, and then my friend drinks out of it, kulan malu, everyone has committed mi'ilah. Talash min achatos. Similarly, if I go out, I have a chatos animal, and I go ahead, and what happens? I pull out some of its wool, and then my friend comes out and pulls out some wool, kulan malu. Ultimately, again, all of them have committed mila. Because we'll say again, so even though we said that there's a general principle that ein mi'ila achar mi'ila by kodshim, by mukdashin, then in general, if something is consecrated before the mizbeach, once the first person commits mi'ila, the item is no longer subject to mi'ila. The exceptions to that rule are karbanos, animals that have been pledged to the mizbeach, and kli sharis, and a golden kli. So Rebbe says, kol davar she'in lo pidyon, yesh bo ma'al achar ma'al. Rebbe says, any item that is not subject to pidyon, right, that is not subject to pidyon, so there's a version that changes it to pagam, but we're going to leave it as pidyon, yesh bo ma'al achar ma'al. Any item that cannot be redeemed, ultimately, again, has mi'ilah achar mi'ilah. And I will say, now, ostensibly, Rebbe is saying the same exact thing as the Tanakama. Because that's what Tanakama said. Tanakama said, we will say, what's something that's not subject to pidyon? What's an example that's not subject to pidyon? A karban. We will say, if you have an animal designated as a karban, you can't redeem that. In other words, you could redeem it once it develops a mum, as we'll discuss. But lamayis, again, if you have a chatos, you can't just decide to redeem that animal and use it for something else. So Rebbe seems to be saying the same thing as the Tanakama, which is any item that is not subject to pidyon, yesh bo me'ila achar me'ila. Look at Rashi for just a moment. She'inu nifsal b'pigima, dahinu kol davar she'inu pidyon, ki hani behemo klisharis terminu masis yesh bo me'ila achar me'ila. Mar mefarish, make it another rabbi. So we'll say, so Rebbe seems to be saying the same exact thing as the Tanakama, namely, any consecrated item that does not have pidyon, ultimately, again, will be subject to mi'ila achar mi'ila. Okay, what's something that does not have pidyon? Pretty much karbanos, right? Karbanos, we'll say stam karban, animal set aside as a karban, does not have pidyon. So what? What's there seen? Rabbi Tanakam, we'll see in the Gemara. Good, says the Gemara, money mas nisin. So we'll say, whose opinion does our Mishnah reflect? Rabbi Nechemyahi. The sanya, ein moal achar moal, elo bebehema bilbat. So So we'll say, because the Braisa says as follows. In general, we say, there's no Mi'ila after Mi'ila. And we'll say, so in general, once you commit Mi'ila, so the object itself is no longer subject to Mi'ila. We'll say, the logic being, once you've committed Mi'ila, you've deconsecrated the consecrated item. Once it's deconsecrated, it obviously is no longer subject to Mi'ila. Ella bebehema bilvan. We'll say the exception to this is an animal that is consecrated as a karban is still subject to Mi'ila even after it has been used in a deconsecrated fashion. Rabbi Nechemiah says it's not just a behema, he holds behema ukli sharis. This applies both to a behema as well as to a service utensil. My time at the Tanakamo. So we'll say, what's the Tanakamo's lashon? Why doesn't Mi'ila or Mi'ila apply to a behema? Kasavar be'inyana de behema ksiv. Because they will say, interestingly enough, he holds that what? Rabbi Nechemiah holds, Tanakama holds, that Allah Lamaisa, the concept of Mi'ila Rabosai, is ultimately again mentioned by Behema. Be'el ha'asham. So I'll say, interestingly enough, the concept of Mi'ila itself is brought down in the context of Karbanos. So therefore, Rabosai, because of that, look at Rashi for just a moment. Kasavar be'inyana de Behema ksiba, Mi'ila. Below b'shar mili, the ksev akoyin yichaper alav be'ela asham, v'hai be'ela asham misiros. We'll say, so essentially, what the Tanakhama holds is like this. Since the concept of mi'ila is mentioned in the context of a karban, of an animal karban, that tells me that the concept of mi'ila applies more acutely by karbanos than it does by other scenarios. How does it apply more acutely? That by other situations, what's the halacha? Once you commit to Mi'ila, then what, Rabbi Osai? Then what? The object is no longer subject to Mi'ila. The exception to that rule is going to be Behema, where even if you commit to Mi'ila with the Behema will still be subject to Mi'ila. Why? Because since Mi'ila is stated specifically in the context of Karban, it tells you that a Karban is subject to Mi'ila achar Mi'ila. Rabbi Nechemiah will say, where does Rabbi Nechemiah get a Kli Shars? Where does he get a Kli from? Amin Lechal Kal V'Chomer. He'll tell you it's Kal V'Chomer, what's the Kal V'Chomer? Imachirim maybe l'kedushasan who asma l'kol shekin. They will say if a kli sharis has the ability to bring other items to kedusha, then certainly again and Rabbi will say those items themselves then become subject to mi'ila. Always remember, generally, it is only once something is put into a kli sharis that it becomes subject to mi'ila. So certainly the kli sharis itself should certainly be subject to a heightened level of mi'ila. What's the heightened level of Mi'ila? That whereas by other items, once you commit Mi'ila, the object is deconsecrated and therefore no longer subject to Mi'ila, Kli Sharis will be the exception to that rule. That even Kli Sharis, even though once it's used for unconsecrated purposes, will still remain subject to Mi'ila. What's the logic, Kal V'Chomer? If the Kli Sharis brings other items to a heightened level of Kedusha, then what? Certainly it in and of itself has a heightened level of Kedusha. So we'll say, what it's saying by Kli Sharis is like this. The idea of remaining, Shimon say, when we generally say in mi'ila achar mi'ila, what does that mean? Again, what do we see? What's the logic there? Why is there no mi'ila after mi'ila? Because once you commit mi'ila with an item, then what? It's not kodesh anymore. If it's not kodesh, it's not subject to mi'ila. What Rabbi Nechemiah is suggesting is that a kli sharis has a heightened level of kedusha. Why does it have a heightened level of kedusha? Because the kli sharis is the very thing which makes other items kadosh. So if it can make other items kadosh, then it in and of itself must certainly have a heightened level of kedusha. How does that heightened level of kedusha manifest itself? That even once you use it for unconsecrated purposes, it still retains its kedusha, and therefore what? Is ultimately again still subject to Mi'ila. Quite amazing. Says the Gemara. So remember again, Rebbe came along and Rebbe seemingly just restated the same concept of the Tanakhama, just using different words. Right? The Tanakhama said, "Ein mi'ila achra mi'ila," except by what? Kachem is be'ach, or b'mukdashin. I should say, behema. Right? By karbanos. Rebbe said, items that do not have pidyon, any item that cannot be redeemed, ultimately again, has mi'ila achra mi'ila. Okay. What's an example of items that can't be redeemed? We'll say, Bepashas, what does it refer to? Karbanos and Kli Sharis. So Rebbe is seemingly saying the same exact thing. What's the Nafkamina? To which the Gemara says, Hainu Tanakama. Rebbe is saying the same thing as the Tanakama. This is fascinating. What's an afkamina? An afkamina between them will be eitzim. What happens if someone pledges? If someone pledges eitzim, ultimately again to the Beis Hamikdash. The Tanna Rabbana, watch this. Haomer harei alai eitzim. If a person says, "I hereby take upon myself an obligation to bring wood, to bring eitzim to the Beis Hamikdash," so it says, "What do you have to bring?" Lo yifchesu mishnei gezirin. Rabbana says, "You can't bring less than two pieces of wood, two planks or two logs, right? You can't bring less than two pieces of wood." Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says, no. Eitzim karbonim. Rabbi says that eitzim, that there's such a thing as a carbon eitzim, right? And what does carbon eitzim require? Right? Carbon eitzim is a regular carbon. And what happens? Utu'un and melach, they require salt. Or you have to put salt, Rabbi say, on the wood, because as the pasuk says, al-kar carbon cha takriv melach. Utu'unin tenufa, and it was required tenufa. What does that mean? From the sawdust, from the right of the wood, from the shavings of the wood, the kohen does a tenufa, a waving. Amarava, ledivrei Rebbe, eitzim tu'unin eitzim. It was said not only that, according to Rebbe, when you offer up wood, wood requires wood. It was said, what does that mean? You see, you might have thought that when you offer up wood to the Beis Hamikdash, so ultimately, again, that wood, you could just burn it straight. You don't need a pyre underneath it. Rebbe says, no. You need to bring wood in order to burn the wood. So I say, so what do you see from here? Right? Rebbe, eitzim tzrichin kemitza. Rebbe, actually, according to Rebbe, eitzim actually require kemitza. Right? That literally take from the sawdust of the wood and you do kemitza. So I say, so what do you see from here? What do you see from here? That according to Rebbe, a carbon eitzim is actually considered to be like a bona fide carbon. According to the Tanna Kamma, carbon eitzim, Rav Osei, is not a bona fide carbon. Therefore, what? According to Rebbe, carbon eitzim does not have pidyon. Carbon eitzim is not subject, ultimately, again, to what? To redemption. Therefore, what? According to Rebbe, by eitzim, yesh mi'ila achar mi'ila. According to the Tanna Kamma, a carbon eitzim is not reckoned like a real carbon, and therefore what? It has pidyon, and because it has pidyon, therefore what? Ein mi'ila achar mi'ila. So we'll say, so nafkamina between Rebbe and the Tanna Kamma would be in a case ultimately again of carbon eitzim. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Amar ledivrei Rebbe, Dikara luhu carbon osan eitzim tunim eitzim achirim naktir alein kimo shar carbon utzichin kemitza. I will actually go back to the previous Hashem. I'm sorry. Rebbe Omer eitzim carbon in tunim melech utunin agasha. The Rebbe dikara luhu carbon havi davreshin bo pegam vikach shekidusha sagof viyeshan moel achar moel shim yashav alein v'chazer yashav alein yeshan moel achar moel rabbanon. To the carlu carbon, lahavi kikachi mizbeach, el lahavi kikachi be the kabayis. Parvu davar shiyesh bo pegam, damu command lo kaimi. So, let's listen to this. So, therefore, the nafkamina is carbon eitzim, right? According to Rebbe, carbon eitzim is like a bona fide carbon. Therefore, what? It is not subject to depreciation, and therefore, aloch lemaisa, it is subject to meila achar meila. So, for example, according to Rebbe, if you were to bring your carbon eitzim to the Beis Hamikdash, and you were to sit on the wood, and then what? Get up, walk around the block. Come back and sit on the wood again. You would be chayiv for every single act of mi'ilah. According to the Rabbanan, carbon eitzim does not have a real status of carbon. Rather, what is it like? It's like katshei by the kabayis, financial sanctity. And because of financial sanctity, once you depreciate it, ultimately, again, you've committed mi'ilah. But once you've committed mi'ilah once, then what? It's been deconsecrated. Ein mi'ilah achar mi'ilah. So we'll say, it's a possible nafkamina. One would be in the realm of carbon eitzim. Another possibility, ikavet, so the Gemara says, Rav Papa says, this is fascinating. Kachi mizbeach temimin, v'na'asu ba'ali mumin, v'avar v'shachtan ikamenayu. Wow. We'll say that passage is, what's the nafkamina between Rebbe and Tanna Kamma? So we'll say, first of all, it just happens to be that in addition to a fascinating nafkamina, this discussion regarding carbon eitzim is quite fascinating as well. Because we often assume that the concept of a carbon eitzim is that you're pledging wood to the Maharacha. You're pledging wood to the pyre of the Mizbeach. Now we see, by the way, that there's a concept, ultimately, again, of carbon eitzim itself. There's a machlokas in Rabbi in the Tanna Kamma. Is carbon eitzim essentially like a carbon to bedek habayis? Or is carbon eitzim mamish like a bona fide carbon of kachi Mizbeach? Rebbe holds that carbon eitzim is mamish like a real carbon in all of its aspects. For our purposes over here, what it means is that yesh mi'ila achar mi'ila, and ultimately it's not subject to depreciation. According to the Rabbanon, there's no real concept of a carbon eitzim. Rather, again, it's just like giving to bed the kabbai. It's fine. Second, nafkpasol nafkamina, rapapa amar, kachin is yechatina. We'll say, what's nafkutina mitana kamo? Where I have carbonos. Kachin is yechatina, bona fide carbonos. Then what happened to them? The nasu bali mumin. And I will say what happens. So let's take a simple case. I have an ola. I was going to give an ola, and then what happens? My ola develops a mum. So I will say, so there's a process. What happens when your ola develops a mum? What do you do? What do you do? You redeem it. You use the money to go ahead and purchase a new ola. And you know, whatever happens to them, happens to them. So we'll say, so what happens? So now in this case over here, my ola developed a mum, and before I had a chance to redeem it, I shechted it. So I will say, so what's the status of this animal? So the Gemara says, Vatanya, because we learned, Kachim is Vechtimimin, Venasu Bale Mumin. So we'll say, if I had a bona fide carbon that then developed a mum, and before I had a chance to redeem it, I slaughtered it. Rebbe Omer Yikavru. Rebbe says, ultimately, again, it has to be buried. The chum say yiftu. I could redeem the carcass of the animal. Look at Rashi now. Rashi says, kachim is vechtimim shanasu bali mum kachim. Achelon yiftu. Rebbe omer yikavru. Rebbe says you bury it. Therefore, what is that teaching? Mishum de kasavar. Hakol hayu bichlal lama doaracha. Afilu kachim zech. Vahani lo asher ba madoaracha. Do hamesu. Hilchach yikperu. Hov leslu pedia. Hilchach yesh pohen moel acher moel hanal. So we'll listen to this. Rebbe holds that if you shechted the Baal Mum carbon before you had a chance to redeem it, that animal retains its sacrificial sanctity because it was never redeemed. Because it retains its sacrificial sanctity, therefore, again, you have to bury it. You can't do anything with it. But what that does mean is if after you shechted it, you committed mi'ila with that carcass, even if multiple people committed the mi'ila with that carcass, what's the halacha? They're all in violation of mi'ila. Why? Because the sacrificial sanctity of the animal is still intact. And the interesting part is, even though I obviously can't offer it up as a carbon, Rebbe holds, since you didn't redeem it, the sacrificial sanctity remains. Because the sacrificial sanctity remains, it's looked at as kachem mizbeach, and because it's kachem mizbeach, therefore what? Yesh mi'ila achar mi'ila. According to the Tanna Kamma, on the other hand, once the animal has been slaughtered, sacrificial sanctity is gone. It may still be redeemed. And because it still could be redeemed, therefore what? It has financial sanctity, not sacrificial sanctity. Because it has financial sanctity and not sacrificial sanctity, therefore what? If somebody committed mi'ila with it, therefore what? Therefore what? It's been deconsecrated. So the first person who commits mi'ila, ultimately he'll be in violation of mi'ila, but ein mi'ila achamina. So we'll say, so two possible nafkaminas ultimately again between Rebbe and the Tanna Kamma. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. Everyone's agreeing on the principle. The principle is that ultimately, again, by mukdashim, by items that have physical sanctity, yesh mi'ila achar mi'ila, right? That they cannot become deconsecrated. The paradigmatic example of that, Rabbi Osai, are animals, right? Are karbonos, or again, are according to our Mishnah, klishares. These items do not lose their sanctity even after they are misused. To be contrasted with what? To be contrasted with items that have financial sanctity. Everyone agrees that if an item has financial sanctity, therefore what? Like Kachem de Kabai is, once you commit Mila, what happens? What happens? You've deconsecrated it. Once you've deconsecrated it, therefore what? It's chulin, which means if someone commits another act of mi'ila, what's the halacha? Ein mi'ila achar mi'ila. Rebbe seems to say the same thing as the Tanna Kamma. Now we see again two possible nafkaminas between Rebbe and the Tanna Kamma. Either, number one, carbon eitzim. Rebbe holds that carbon eitzim has kidusha sagof, has sacrificial sanctity. Therefore, yesh mi'ila achar mi'ila. Whereas the Tanna Kamma holds carbon eitzim has financial sanctity. And therefore, ein mi'ila achar mi'ila. Or possibility number two, Rebbe will say, is where a carbon developed a mum and you shecht it before going through the process of redemption. According to the Tanna Kamma, once it develops a mum, it no longer has sacrificial sanctity, it only has financial sanctity, therefore, not subject to mi'ila achar mi'ila. Rebbe holds that if that animal was slaughtered before it was redeemed, it retains its financial sanctity, and therefore, yesh mi'ila achar mi'ila. Pick up at the Mishnah tomorrow.
Rabbi, why did the one who comes after the first one he consecrated?